Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Can't hear records on my demo. And welcome, everybody, to a Victory Monday edition of Jetstream Radio. I am the man with the plan, D.A. Osorio, joined as always by my co-host, the best in the world, Paulie Bruzy. Paulie, how are you feeling on this Monday, brother?
Man, three in a row, another Victory Monday. The home stretch to the end of the season with meaningful December games. I couldn't be more excited, and I'm ready to get into tonight's show, which is jam-packed with guests.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, and it feels good. It feels good to be 3-0. The Jets took care of business yesterday, beating a mediocre Titans team. And it's not a win that most Jet fans are used to because the Jets usually don't show up for games like that. But from jump, they showed up, and they played a hell of a game. And like Paulie said, we have a jam-packed show for you guys. We have four different guests for our four quarters tonight. We're going to jump right into it, right into it. I am incredibly happy to introduce you guys, to intro my brother Jeff Capellini of WFAN and CBS New York, who Jeff and I have had numerous fantasy football wars, but this is the first time that he and I are both on a podcast at the same time. Jeff, what is going on, brother? Happy Monday.
How are you, my man?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you feeling?
We played fantasy football together, but someone didn't invite me back this year. I think the business got too bad for some people.
I didn't even get invited back either, Jeff. So I think they got tired of seeing you and I run roughshod through that league. I think that's exactly what happened.
All right, we'll stick to that story.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for joining us, man, on this Monday. Jets sitting at eight and five, right in the thick of this AFC wildcard race. Let's jump right into it. You had a really, 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 really good article, and Jeff, you know I love all of your work, but you had a really, really good article highlighting just how the move to sign Eric Decker and now bringing in Marshall and Fitzpatrick have absolutely galvanized this fan base and galvanized this offense. The Jets haven't had a top 10 offense since 1998. I want to get your thoughts just on Fitzpatrick's year so far and segging into what kind of extension are the Jets looking at if he's the guy that they want to bring back next year.
Yeah, it's really it's a great story in the sense that, you know, talk about a guy who had all the odds stacked against him for the most part. I mean, he was
right.
Fitzpatrick was viewed as, you know, stopgap measure at best. You know, maybe he gets them. Maybe they're a 500 team. Maybe, you know, maybe he saves. He restores some sense of sanity to it if Geno falls apart. And next thing you know, the guy is forced to play. And if you watch. You know, you watched him play in the past. He's never really had any real weapons. I mean, yes, he had Hopkins for a while last year and A.J. for a little while. But then to start a season with two guys, accomplished receivers like Decker and Marshall, the kind of guys that the Jets simply never have.
Right.
I think those two have the potential to elevate the game of any quarterback. I think if Geno Smith had gotten a shot, if he had not gotten punched, you know, I think that they probably would have helped him on some level as well. I don't know if it would have been as much of an improvement that you saw with Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I think Geno probably would have benefited somewhat as well.
He's trending upwards, right? He's on pace to break Vinny Testaverde's team record in touchdowns. Only 11 interceptions. Paulie and I were talking about that before we went on the air, just how crazy it is to think that a Jet quarterback has only thrown 11 interceptions. Because we've seen to,
isn't
we've
it
seen
wonderful?
To, other than Pennington.
Yeah. Other, it's crazy.
Other than Pennington. Yeah, other than Pennington, we seem to get the guy that always throws interceptions. And now, so obviously three games left in the season, Jets in prime position to make the playoffs. Is he the guy that you extend, and what would you give him in order to keep him in home and possibly be the bridge to either Bryce Petty or another quarterback that you draft in April?
You know, if it ain't broke, don't bother trying to fix it. I mean, if you can keep the guy, I mean, what he's done so far warrants that he'd be brought back for. I mean, I don't want to guess at the term, but let's say 2-year deal, maybe, you know, 2-year deal.
Right.
Sounds sounds reasonable, right? I don't know what the money would be. I don't know what the money would be, but you know, he's not going to get paid. He's not going to get paid $15 million a season, but they bring him
right.
back. And what's fair? And they'll determine what's fair. I couldn't tell you what fair is at this point, but the guy
mm-hmm.
has done an excellent job. They believe in him. The team believes in him. The fan base has grown, you know, has warmed up to him in a way. But Jets fans aren't fooled. All they want is a win. They just want to win.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care who gets them there and how it happens. You know, if you win, if you don't, you know, if you raise the bar from what it had been for all those years, you're going to have a following and you're going to have a big bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's earned it. Now, you were saying before, it's funny to not see a Jets quarterback throw interceptions. Well, the funny thing is, Fitzpatrick in the past has had a penchant for throwing interceptions and fumbling the football. And the
That's
fact
true.
That he has just 4 interceptions since the Patriots game. So that was October 25th. In that time
right.
period, since the Pats game, he's thrown 16 TDs and 4 interceptions. And I don't think he's fumbled the ball away once. That right there is, you know, that is the ball game. The Jets have been able to run the football for about 6 or 7 years now, for the most part.
Right.
Now that you got a quarterback in there who can complete a high percentage, he can complete a high percentage of passes, but yet not turn the ball over. By default, he's going to put the team in a position to win. Now when he has those weapons out wide as well. Now, look, he's not the prettiest guy in the world when it comes to the way he throws the football. He has a hard time
right.
throwing the ball deep. He's not accurate deep. We know that. You know, he sometimes, but he does the smart thing when it comes to he recognizes who he has out wide. He has Brandon Marshall. Throw the ball up and let Brandon Marshall do what he does. And you know, a lot of guys don't have that intangible. But Fitzpatrick knows his limitations, I guess, to the point where, you know, I can get away with doing certain things because I trust the guys I have around
me. Awesome, and I couldn't agree more, Jeff. So yesterday had all the writings over it of being a trap game, and that typical game where the Jets needed to win and they came out flat. But it was the total opposite, a dominating
yeah.
performance. Just give us some of your thoughts yesterday on the Jets win, and it was good to get a win that they definitely needed and they should have won.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't think there's a Jets fan alive who didn't, in some part of his soul, the deepest reaches of his soul, fear that, you know, they're going to come out and it's going to be, they're going to be down 7-3 at halftime to a team they should be destroying. I mean, it's just natural for you to think that way. And I admit I did the same thing. But the beautiful part was they came out and scored on the first drive. That set the tone for the whole game. This defense is really good. And it may not be overwhelmingly dominant in the form of, you know, sacks and tackles for losses and whatnot, but it confuses the hell out of everybody. I mean, you really got to be a savvy quarterback, savvy offensive coordinator to, you know, undo the knots that Todd Bowles' defense and Casey Rogers' defense ties you into with the movements and just with the packages alone. So the Jets, I believe, if you can get, you know, you give them the lead, they're going to be very difficult. They're going to be very difficult to handle. And we've seen it, especially over the last 3 games. But, you know, as soon as they get the ball rolling on offense, it seems like, you know, it's different than in years past. You know, you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and, you know, what are they going to do to screw it up? Not so much. Not so much now.
Yeah, it's definitely a different feel, Jeff, right? Like you said, I think the best way to put it is that there's matchups to exploit everywhere. For like defensively, you see Bowles and Rodgers kind of come up with different ways to use guys that maybe
yeah.
past regimes wouldn't use. Now, heading into the offseason, and granted, we have 3 games left in the season, but heading into the offseason, the Jets are going to be – they're probably going to have a little bit more cap room than expected right now, depending on where the salary cap lands. They're going to have a top 20 pick in the draft, plus the
yep.
bargaining chip that is Mo Wilkerson. What are 3 moves that you feel McConaughey needs to make? Because what he's kept talking about is building a team that can sustain winning, right? And not just taking
yeah.
a win for 1 year, but winning consistently like Seattle, like New England. What's 3 moves that you think the Jets need to make this offseason in order to actually take that next step towards being a consistent contender in this league?
I think they're going to have to just – I mean, a lot has been made of the offensive line. I think The pass protection has been excellent. The run blocking has been, I don't want to say it's been good. I don't want to say it's been bad. It's been somewhere in the middle. I know Ivory's, is one of the top running backs in the AFC. But so much of that is what he gets after first contact. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they might need to just improve the run blocking in some form and maybe get somebody else. I'm not saying get rid of long-time guys who have been here. I'm not going to name anyone in particular. But there have been some guys who have stepped forward this year. Winters has gotten better. Carpenter's having a fantastic year. Mangold is Mangold. You got to wonder a little bit about Brick. A little bit. He is getting up there a bit. And you have to worry a little. When Cologne was in there, he wasn't what he was. Giacomini is what he is. He's Easter fan. The offensive line might need a tweak. I think you got to have to do something to improve special teams. They need a returner. They need an explosive guy who can be versatile, you can use as a receiver, and then you can use on kick returns and punt returns. You got to have that guy. The Jets special teams is, for the most part, as far as return game, is not great, and the coverage has been – it was very good this weekend. It was very good on Sunday, but we've seen it, this season struggle big time. And as for Wilkerson, it's so easy to say early in the season that they should get rid of him and get something for him, but the game has changed in a way because – if you're going to use Wilkerson, the odds are you would use him or trade him or whatever to get a quarterback. Now you may not need a quarterback for another 2 or 3 years. Maybe. Okay? So what do you do with Wilkerson? He had a better season than Sheldon Richardson. He's been amazing. He's literally had the best season of his career. He's probably going to go into the Pro Bowl this year, unlike years past when he's, some would say he got snubbed. This year, if he's not in the Pro Bowl this year, there's something wrong. It should be an investigation.
Right.
I think you have to be very careful with him. They're probably going to franchise him. I think I'm just going to put it off for a year, franchise him, see if he can replicate 2015 next season, and then you really make a decision. Just put it off. You have the wherewithal when it comes to roster depth, but you can put it off for another year. So just do it. Don't clear your headache that doesn't need to be there. I wondered about Ivory a little bit because he tends to get nicked. He just has a mystery ailment where he'll disappear for 2 or 3 series, and you're like, what's going on? You see him getting his hamstring worked on the sideline. I don't want to call him a tin man, but he sometimes gets nicked up, and is it because of his running style, or is it just because of the way he is? So
right.
But I do like the fact that, even I've seen more and more as the weeks have gone by, that Ridley's starting to play a little better. And now Powell has just emerged as a pass-catching force, and he's a good short yardage guy. For this season, I think they're fine. They're going to have to do some thinking when it comes to the running back position next year. Maybe not a major overhaul, but they're going to have to do maybe something just to solidify it a little bit more.
Definitely, definitely. And Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on this Monday edition of Jetstream Radio. We appreciate the feedback, the interaction with you. We appreciate,
Absolutely,
stories that you have. You and I were talking about Mickey Schuler, who, again, guys, we don't know, Jeff is a huge resource for, younger Jet fans. Not that Jeff's old, but, he knows a lot about teams of years past that maybe a lot of us didn't really get to see play. So I appreciate the constant interaction with you, Jeff, and I appreciate reading
all
your articles.
Always.
I'm a huge fan of your work.
You guys are bringing up tight ends and stuff. It's just funny because so many of the people we interact with on a daily basis, as far as they go about as far back, maybe some of the veteran guys, they might go as far back as Johnny Mitchell. But the Jets had tight ends back in the day when they had an offense with Mickey Schuler, and before that when they had Jerome Barkham in the late 70s. Those guys, back before the tight end became a focal point of the offense, were really good. And, now they don't need the tight end so much because of the way Daly's offense is set up. But, the way things are going right now, it's getting better. The Jets are peaking now. We'll see what happens. I'm working on a column for later this week, which is more of a cautionary tale. Look, don't worry about playoff scenarios. Don't worry about the Steelers. Don't worry about the Chiefs. Just because we've seen the Jets 8-5, 9-4, going into the end of the middle and the end of December so many times in the past and just failed to get it done. In the past,
right,
largely been because they lacked sufficient quarterback play at one time. We're going to see now, this would be the ultimate, I think, determining factor in what you do with this Packers, is how he handles the next three games. If he handles them like he handled the previous, 13, I think you got to bring him back.
There you go. There you go. No, and these last three games are going to answer a lot of questions for not only the Jets going forward, but also just how set up are they going to be for a run next year should they not make the playoffs. I think the best thing we can do is just enjoy the last three games because 11-5 is 11-5. And if the Jets get to that, regardless of the scenario, 11-5 is a damn good year.
And even if you get to 9-7 would be a disappointment. Yes.
Absolutely.
Keep in perspective that this team was 4-12 a year ago. And this team totally overhauled its front office, its coaching staff, and did a complete makeover of its roster. For it to improve from 4-12 to where it is now with a rookie coach and a journeyman quarterback, something's going on here. You know what I mean? Something positive is going on here that I think they're going to be able to take with them, a continuity factor that you take forward into subsequent years. If they can build off this, they have a potential to be very good next year.
Definitely, definitely. So, yeah, thank you, Jeff. You guys can follow Jeff at Green Lantern Jet on Twitter. He will respond to all of you. He talks about everything and anything under the sun, and he will not be afraid to school you should you say something crazy, like most of you are known to do in his mentions. So cut it out. But thanks a lot, Jeff, for joining us tonight and talking with everybody. We appreciate it, man.
No problem. Yeah, give a shout-out to my boy Drew from Jersey. And,
Zach's
got to blow
your socks
off with his knowledge. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, man.
Have a good one.
Thank you. So that was Jeff Capellini from WFAN at CBS New York, and now I'm going to kick it to my man Paulie to introduce the man that's joining us for our second quarter.
Hey, we're bringing on Kyle Smith from the AFC East Bros podcast. How's it going, Kyle?
It's going great, guys. How you guys doing?
Going good. We're happy to have you on. So what we're going to have you do is not everybody may be familiar with your podcast. It's a great podcast. Covers the AFC East. They cover other topics as well. So just tell us a little bit about your podcast, and then give us your intake and input on the state of the current AFC East.
Sure thing. So our podcast is the AFC East Bros. The Bros stands for it's my brother and myself. So my brother is a huge, huge, huge Buffalo Bills fan. Has been since, I don't know if it was like NFL Live 99 or something. I know we had a demo disc game and he used to play with Doug Flutie and he just got hooked on the Bills. So he's been on the Bills for a long time now. And I've always been a huge Jets fan. And we would always go to Jets-Bills games when the stadium would be dead. You know, it'd be late December game. Both teams are out of the playoffs. But, you know, we were still very passionate about our fans. So we would always just, you know, naturally be talking in our spare time about the state of the AFC, particularly our two teams. And then we're like, you know what, why don't we do a show about the AFC East? Because naturally, as a Jets fan, you always know a lot about the Patriots because you're always watching them in January and February football. So, and, you know, those stinky Dolphins too. You know, why not talk about them as well? So, you know, we made it a point to watch all the AFC East games and always talk about it. And we accept a lot of calls. It's really a fan-driven show. Where we like to get the fans' input. We keep them on for a long time and go back and forth with the fans. So the current state of the AFC East, now to go to that point, I mean, if you're a Jets fan, you're liking what you're seeing, right?
Absolutely.
You know, sad Rex at the presser. And, you know, now see, the thing is my brother, a couple years back, he was the biggest Rex Ryan basher there was. Not anyone bigger than him. And now it's like the tables have turned because whenever there was like a scandal or a controversy with the Jets, I could always count on my brother to contact me and, you know, make fun of me about it, even though the Bills, you know, always pretty much suck for them in that time frame.
That's true.
But now we're kind of seeing it, and it's really a lot of the same stuff. And you saw it early on, you know, Rex won over the fan base in a heartbeat. You always heard this word, refreshing. Refreshing. Like, he's bringing this refreshing attitude to the Bills because they had Doug Marrone before who, you know, he led them to a 9-7 season, their first winning season in a very long time, and brought them very close within the playoffs. But, you know, nonetheless, very bad with the media. Apparently, he didn't have a good relationship with his players. And at the end of the day, he left his players. So, you know, Bills fans naturally wanted to root against him. And you get Rex Ryan. This is a guy who, hey, listen, he did beat us up many times in the past, but you also got to look at it from the Bills' perspective. You just beat this guy three times in a row, killing him all three of those times. But So I know my time is limited, guys, but let me kind of get to where I need to go.
No worries.
It's not good for the Bills right now. It doesn't look like they're going to make the playoffs. They would need a miracle. And not only that, but you're talking, this was a fan base that had sold out the most season tickets that they've had. And, boy, I think you're from the Syracuse area, so you're probably not too far from the building, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm about 45 minutes from Q, so about a 3.5 hour, depends on how fast you drive, 3.5 hours from Buffalo. But it's Buffalo Bills country around here. I'm not far from Rochester, which is a big Bills backing. So I'm born and raised in Bills country.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it. I mean, this is a team that went to 4 straight Super Bowls, but the Bills have outsold their season ticket records from back then. That's how much anticipation there was for this. That's what Rex Ryan can do to a fan base.
That's
but
all
now,
he can do.
I mean, we're seeing 16 years, and, you know, Rex, he didn't make a guarantee of the Super Bowl, thank God, but he did pretty much guarantee that they'd make the playoffs this year, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And, you know, we were tweeting this out for, you know, a couple months ago now. Has the Rex Ryan, you know, honeymoon in Buffalo, has it ended? And some Bills fans were saying, yeah, it already has. And this is months ago. But now we're seeing that the playoffs are out of the reach. So I really think that it's kind of over. And I think a lot of fans are kind of, you know, turning against the Rex Ryan era because, you know, a lot of them are seeing that, you know, we had so much, you know, we were so effective with Jim Schwartz last year. 54 sacks, all these turnovers, you know, top 5 defense, unquestionably in the NFL. And now, they're a middle-of-the-road defense. You could argue that the Bills' offense has been better than their defense this year. And it's kind of been a misuse of players. And the players, Mario Williams most notably, have gone and spoken out against, you know, being misused, dropping back in coverage. Kind of like what we saw with Quinton Coppel, where he was jamming receivers at the line. I know, Dalvin, you spoke about this ad nauseum. So, I mean, if you're a Jets fan, you got to like – one of the things Dalvin was saying is who's got the biggest shot to maybe upset the Patriots, overtake the Patriots? And you have to think – I mean, it's the Jets. This season and going forward, I would assume.
Yeah, do you – I mean, that's a great point about Rex, Kyle, because I know, like, I have friends who are Bills fans, and I remember even as recently as last year, they were like, oh, Rex is nowhere near that good a coach, and then the minute they hired him, their tunes changed. So, I know exactly what you're going through with your brother. With that said, I mean, let's focus on even just the AFC East and namely the Patriots, because the Patriots have dominated this division, and you gave me the perfect segue into it. They've dominated this division for a really, really long time, but they lost to Denver, they lost to Philly. Yesterday they played Houston, and all seems right with them as soon as they got Gronk back. But there seems to not be this air of invisibility around New England like there used to be. What are your thoughts on just the Patriots this year? And like you said, you touched on the Jets being the biggest threat going forward. What do you think the Jets need to do to overtake the Patriots beginning this year and going forward?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. The Patriots are not invincible, as you said, and they definitely can be beaten. But in my opinion, still the best team in the NFL. I don't care that Carolina's 13-0, and they're damn impressive. I doubt them every week, and they just, you know, 38-0 over Atlanta. I mean, that's that's no easy task. If these teams were to meet in the Super Bowl, I'd be picking the Patriots. Go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Kyle, but, I mean, sitting around with my friends every week, we doubt Carolina, too. Like, we know Cam is good. We know their defense is good, but you know, we look at their skill positions and we're like, okay, this is going to be the week where the skill positions don't show up. And then somehow, some way, they show up, and every week they just win a game. So you're not the only one that continually is not only enjoying what the Panthers are doing, but still doubting what they're doing.
Yeah, it's amazing what's going on over there. But, yeah, the Patriots, what you look at the previous 2 weeks, what happened out in Denver and what happened in Philly, I mean, that Denver game, you knew it was going to be hard. The Patriots' offensive line sucks. Denver's got some great pass rushers, some great secondary. You know Edelman. Gronk goes out late in the game. Amendola a little bit banged up. And then you look at this Eagles game. I mean, you're talking 100-yard pick six. When do you ever see that from Brady? And you could argue that was on the receiver, not on Brady. You're talking about a block punt. You're talking about a Darren Sproles punt return for a touchdown. I mean, the Patriots are always good on special teams, and the Eagles are one of the better special teams in the league. We saw that when they returned a punt against us. But that game's really an aberration. I mean, and honestly, the Patriots are driving down the field at the end of the game, and they have three straight drop passes by their receivers. I mean, they could have won that game. And then, like I said, the Denver game, it was a tough game, and they were dominating for most of the game. So I think the Patriots team that we saw this past week against Houston, just a dominant performance, is more of the team that we're going to see going forward than those teams that we saw the previous 2 weeks. And as you said before, Dalvin, as soon as Gronk come back, you know, no wonder the Patriots are playing. Mm-hmm. When you talk about non-quarterbacks, how much they mean to their team, MVP. I mean, I was tweeting it out. Is Gronk a legitimate MVP candidate? And I think that you have to say that he should be in the conversation, the amount of value that he brings to the team. And I was saying this on my show last week. When you look at the Patriots last season, Gronk tore his ACL the previous season, right? And so when he got – when the first four games last season – everyone knows the Patriots were 2-2. They had the Monday night debacle in Kansas City. Gronk was a limited player. He was only playing maybe 50% of the snaps those first 4 weeks.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't until the Cincinnati game, week 5, that he started playing the vast majority of the snaps, and that's when you saw the Patriots' offense really start to kick off, and they never looked back from there. Really when they started to get Gronk involved. He elevates Brady's play. I mean, look how Brady elevates other people. But Gronk elevates Brady. And Gronk said after that Cincinnati game, I wanted Brady to look like Brady again. And he sure did that. And he does it, we're seeing this season as well.
Awesome.
So what are the
awesome,
Jets, your other question, I'm sorry, Dobbin, you wanted, what did the Jets need to do? Real quick, I mean, how do you stop Gronk? I mean, do you do a similar format to what Rex Ryan did a couple weeks ago? I mean, obviously, you got to double him. I think Calvin Pryor is crucial on him. You know, when we played the Patriots back in, what was it, week 6, Gronk didn't start heating up until Calvin Pryor went out of that game when he injured his ankle, when big Michael Williams, the 300-pound tight end for the New England Patriots, landed on him. But I think one of the key things is the Jets have to establish a consistent running game with Ivory. And that was really when we saw Ivory. Did he pull his hamstring early? He was never the same. But the Jets, the best way to beat the Patriots is to run the ball and keep Brady off the field. And if the Jets are going to run the ball the way that they did for the majority of the past month, month and a half, I don't think they'll be able to beat the Patriots. And sorry, Paul, I cut you off, but go back to what you were saying.
No, you're fine. Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with you, and especially on your comments about Gronk being, you know, I don't know about an MVP talk for the season, but definitely for that team other than Brady. But real quick, just your thoughts on the Jets' season this year. Are they about where you thought they'd be, well above your expectations, or well exceeded your expectations at this point?
So I think they're going to be right about where I thought they would be. Overall, I would say I thought the defense would be a little bit better, but didn't know that the offense would be quite this good. Dalvin, I know that you're the ultra optimist, as am I.
I am.
I went and I picked the Jets to go 10-6 at the beginning of the season, and that's with the assumption that Geno Smith would be the quarterback. And some people are calling me crazy. And listen, 10-6 is definitely in sight. They just got to win 2 out of the last 3. But I think they're right about where I thought they would be. Winning the games that they should.
I am the eternal optimist. You're right. I'm just like you. I think they're going to win every game. 16-0 needs to happen. Thank you so much, Kyle, for joining us tonight on Monday. We appreciate it. Guys, make sure to follow Kyle on @AFC East Bros. His podcast is on every week. It's really, really dope. It's a lot of fun. And if you've ever argued with your brother about sports, we know that it's exactly the kind of conversations you're going to have with your brother whenever they piss you off and you're like, well, Mike's got 5 rings. He's better than LeBron. Those are the kind of arguments Kyle and his brother get into on the podcast. Thank you, son Kyle, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and Jets fans, call in and make sure that you give my brother crap. Please do that.
Yes. Make sure you guys do
that. Absolutely.
All right, guys. Awesome
thanks
show.
A lot,
thanks
Kyle.
A bunch
go
for
Jets.
Having me on.
Thanks for coming on, bro.
No, and I mean, a lot of the points that Kyle made, which I absolutely agree with him. I think that the Jets the Patriots, they don't have that air of invisibility that they used to have, and I think a lot of it is because they lost Edelman, who's an underrated receiver. I think losing Gronk for those couple games, and Gronk is so important to what they do. Brady, whenever he's pressured, he looks for Gronk. Gronk is his safety valve, similar to how most young quarterbacks look for their tight ends. Well, Brady, that's who he looks for, and I think that you're looking at a team, and again, the state of the NFL changes every week, though, because if I would have told you that Andy Dalton would probably be lost for the season and A.J. McCarron was about to start for the Bengals, you probably would have called me crazy. But yet here we are staring at the last three games of the season, and it's Charlie Whitehurst versus T.J. Yates for the AFC South lead, and you have McCarron against Brock Osweiler for the second seed of the AFC. So let's see. I mean, it's a crazy, crazy, crazy,
yeah,
crazy year.
I believe McCarron's going to be the 52nd quarterback to start a game this year. Different quarterback. That's insane. It's really crazy.
And
it's
he's trying to be the first Alabama quarterback to start and win a game since 1957.
I don't think it's that far back, but it's been a while.
Listen, Sean, if you're listening, it's been like 90 years. Let it go. Bama sucks. So don't turn out quarterback. With that said, let's introduce my man, Jeff Lloyd of Draft Breakdown. We're going to do a little draft talk here for our third quarter. Jeff, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's doing great. Guys, that was great there with Sean there at the end. absolutely had me chuckling.
Listen, anytime you can take a shot at Sean, you have to. You must do it. Sean, we love you, but we are always taking shots.
And it was lined up like a T-ball. It was lined up like a T-ball. I had to swing. I couldn't just let that go by. No, seriously, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today on Monday edition of Jetstream Radio. We're really glad to have you. For all you guys that don't know, Jeff knows his stuff when it comes to draft talk. And very rarely do you find Florida State fans that actually know what they're talking about come football draft season. But we have one right here in Jeff. Let's get right into it, man. Let's get right into it. Top draft prospects that might interest the Jets in the coming draft. Now, there's a team that's probably going to pick anywhere from the 18, which is the worst-case scenario, to probably like the mid-20s, best-case scenario. And I know you guys at FSU just churn out cornerbacks, right? You have Ronald Darby, who's been phenomenal this year, and the Jets may have a hole at cornerback. Do you think that they take one of the studs that you guys are churning out, or any other prospects just overall that the Jets may be looking at come April? Just give us your thoughts early on. I know we're a couple months ahead, but just your thoughts.
First things first is with the Jets, I feel the two biggest needs are probably going to be linebacker and probably – DeBrickshaw is most likely going to have to go. The amount of money he makes, you can draft somebody in the first round and pay a lot less, who can probably give you pretty much similar play. So, you know, obviously Jalen Ramsey, me personally, I want to put him at free safety. I want to line him at nickel. I want to do everything I can with him because his best attribute is he can do what you're asking him to do, and he can do it well. So he can do it from any spot on the field. To pencil him in the corner, I think they really like Marcus Williams, which I said when D was hurt, obviously the spring going in the summer, I took a lot of heat for saying I think D Milner's in a lot of trouble here. They signed three cornerbacks. Right. They had Marcus Williams. Walls does his job. So I think that was something, you know, obviously there. So that and, you know, linebacker. Tackle-wise, you're probably going to miss out on the big three of Stanley, Tunsil, and obviously Decker. Jason Springs out of Indiana is an impressive athlete. He's got a bit of a mean streak to him. We're going to see Conklin from Michigan State here playing in some huge games over the next couple of weeks. So, you know, those guys definitely interest me. Or then you look edge. Obviously, look, Calvin Pace has been around forever, but eventually forever is going to end. Muldoon is looking like he's going to step up and he's going to be a solid performer in a starting role for us here. So we're going to need someone to fill the void. So, obviously, Shaq Lawson at Clemson, he's not going to project as a 4-3 DN because of size. I like him. I don't love him. Noah Spence is really interesting. If his act is together, and this is what we need to see from Bowles and Mack, are they okay to, you know, take a high chance on a kid who's got some issues? Obviously, Spence got some issues, but Spence can get in the backfield. He can create havoc. I, 2 years ago, liked him better than Bosa. I think Joey Bosa is going to be functional in the NFL. He's going to be a really good player. I think there's a chance Noah Spence could be a 10-plus sack guy a year. So I look at that. Then if you want a guy who's going to maybe going to be a little bit more of a run support edge, where Muldoon's a pass rusher. Then we're going to bring in Jordan Jenkins out of Georgia. I think he can give you enough in run support. You can give him enough free rein where he'll get you 6 to 10 sacks a year, maybe on a good year. So he's a guy interesting too there as well.
I love everything, especially Jenkins. He's a favorite of mine. But Jeff, I got to ask you. So say that we tag Muhammad Wilkerson, okay, and we explore a trade opportunity. Now a team in the top 5 or 10 is interested. So hypothetically, who's a player you would or you think the Jets could or should, utilize the trade chip of Muhammad Wilkerson to move up in the draft for a player to get?
If in this scenario means maybe you're just letting Fitz go, me, I'd sign Fitz. I think he'll sign friendly, so I would just stick with that. If you're going this way, you've got to be looking quarterback. Yeah, obviously the Jared Goff talks are all over the map. So if you're going this high, you want future stability at quarterback. So I like Jared Goff. I really like Jared Goff. He had a good, really good September. Obviously, Cal is, you know, mediocre right now in the Pac-10. Pac-12. His October was atrocious. People started focusing in more and cutting off the gimme routes that you're going to get in college football with the spread, which he was overlooking. Then he came back in November. Looked a lot better. Went back to do more film work. Cut down on the interceptions. Cal's going to a bowl game, and there's only one reason besides the coach and the system, and it's Jared Goff. I'm not saying I don't like Paxton Lynch. For me, everyone wants to say, oh, well, he plays at Cal. Well, Lynch plays at Memphis, and when you throw for 7 touchdowns and 249 yards in 25 minutes of offense, that worries me more about how much you're eating up the competition you're playing. Paxton Lynch may be the better quarterback down the day, but me first, I will take Goff first because I think I am okay with his floor, and especially with what Gailey's running. 15 to 20 routes with 6'2", 200-plus pound wide receivers, which is why Curley, Sean Lesser-Durham, is not a fit in this offense. I think I see this working out. If you told me 2 more years of Fitz, the way this is going right now, and maybe you improve some of your interior defensive and offensive line needs and a linebacker, and you, if you want to go that route first, I'm totally fine with it. The way Fitz is playing right now with these guys, it's a pleasure to watch. This passing offense is humming. Yes, you're going to get a lapse every now and then because he doesn't have the elite talent of some of the elite talent. But Fitz is getting it done.
Yeah, and he's playing at a level that, honestly, us as Jet fans, we haven't seen from a quarterback in a very, very long time. So that was one of the better
moves. It's all about
Fitz
magic.
It truly is.
Jeff, so now a lot of Jet fans don't like to hear this, and I'm a big I hated to see John Hitchens go the way that he did. I thought that was a terrible, terrible way for a GM to go. I think it sets a terrible precedent. With that said, though, I am more than giddy at the fact that there's guys that he brought in that are now contributing. Now, fancy that. You bring in a better coaching system, a better coaching staff, and lo and behold, some guys tend to produce. But just the Jets are trying to make up for the fact that they missed on a lot of draft picks towards the end of Mike Tannenbaum, and the fact that Isaac had 12 draft choices and he missed on a lot of the middle-round picks. However, this year you have Brian Winters, who's played key minutes at guard now that Willie Colon's been out. You have Quincy Enunwa, who's now been turned into an H-back slash tight end, and he's played really, really well, and they really, really missed him. Sheldon Richardson's arguably one of the better defensive linemen in the league. Calvin Pryor, playing his natural position at strong safety, has been better. What have been your thoughts on the Jets draft class, first Max first year, and then Isaac's 2 draft classes that have kind of built the foundation of this team now going forward?
See, the problem with Isaac classes it goes back to the 1 draft, the 12th, and none of it really played out. We did a live show that night. We did the first round of that draft. I was giddy for Beckham. I knew it wasn't going to happen, so it didn't happen. Calvin Pryor, and this is the prime example where you're going here. Calvin Pryor, way overdrafted. No, the next day,
right.
Even, you know, all my guys in the draft community, oh, my God, Jeff, Calvin Pryor. Like, our show went to a standstill for about 15 seconds because I was just like, wow, Calvin Pryor. Because
right.
The problem with Rex is Rex took people on what he saw. And that's what he did with him. And Calvin Pryor, yes, he will knock somebody's head off, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't have a guy just out there playing an assassin role. He needs a role where he can contribute. And even yesterday you saw it, the short completion on the sideline, the kid had a chest up to Pryor, and Pryor choked him out. I mean, literally choked him out. So it is the mm-hmm. coaching. Now, Deion Buchanan, who actually in the same draft went to Arizona, was a huge fan.
This is your Man Crush Monday. Literally your
Absolutely.
Man Crush Monday.
And I will tell you right now, I actually was messaging with Deion today because they're playing in Philly on Sunday. I want to go, but I don't want to show up in a Deion Buchanan jersey in Philly. It's a dangerous thing. You can't really do that. So it's funny. He's like, oh, really? It's bad? I'm like, yeah, you might want to just chill at the hotel and order some cheesesteaks then. But Deion, now here was a guy Bowles saw what his ability best was. And no, he's not playing in a linebacker position, Calvin Pryor, like Deion is. And Deion's excelling in it. But you have him closer, 70 yards. Look, it's simple. Here you go. You have a much smaller square radius where, look, if somebody's got the ball, take him out. Take him down.
Right.
And Calvin is excelling in it. So, yes, obviously you can feast off of, you know, what was left to you because they could not make it work. Absolutely. You know, but Mac and Al, but I think the thing with Mac and Bowles is they're seeing eye to eye here. And I think when they're grading players and evaluating players, even this is just one class, they're agreeing on them, which makes it much easier. You know, Rex watched the prior YouTube clips of, you know, people getting knocked out. Whereas, you know, obviously Idzik was probably more of, you know, is he disciplined? But then there's Rex again. It doesn't matter if he's disciplined. And that's
he can knock somebody out.
Exactly. That's how that ship sunk, plain and simple. And as the players brought up, there was no accountability. It was go for it. And they survived. And look, Rex did survive with it for a little bit. Idzik probably was a terrible match for him. And that's how, you know, everybody moved on.
That's how we ended up here. Just one last thought on we talked a little bit with Jeff Capellini from WFAN about the extension for Fitzpatrick, and that's been kind of a thing that's kind of been coming up a lot on social media just because, you know, he is in the last year of his deal. He is now gearing up to become a free agent. And like you said, we're operating under two assumptions, right? Do you re-sign Fitz and have him be the bridge for maybe a second or third round quarterback, or do you go for broke and try to trade up for Jared Goff, who honestly, Jeff, he's my favorite quarterback in the draft. I like Paxton Lynch. I think he might be better down the road. But Jared Goff, I think, can play in this league right now, considering the attrition at quarterback around the league. So what would you give Fitzpatrick to bring him back? And would you, in your bet, is your best case scenario, Fitz for a couple of years holding it down for Bryce Petty to start, why, full disclosure, I hate Bryce Petty. I don't think he's going to be very good. Or do you go and get the potential franchise quarterback in Jared Goff? What would you do?
No. Wait, I got to say one thing before Jeff goes talking about the quarterback is I will never, ever, ever fall in love with a quarterback again. After my heart was broken and we didn't get Mariota, I'm happy with Leo, but my heart will never go to a quarterback again out of the draft. I can't do it.
It's difficult, and obviously Goff, I'm not saying it's a dream scenario because you can never guarantee a quarterback's going to pair up. I mean, I will stay with Fitz. Here we have Marshall, Decker, Fitz. Obviously, you know, Marshall needs to be addressed as well money-wise. But here's three guys all around the same age. They've all got their foundation set. Eric Decker knows what it means to succeed in New York, obviously with the reality star wife. Brandon Marshall mm-hmm. obviously wants to be here because he's earning in New York as well, obviously with the show he does. Fitz just wants a good role where he's happy with his big family and everything's working out. I'd say the best you have here is maybe a two-year window with these three. I don't think Fitz wants to leave. I don't think Fitz is, you know, he's not a guy that, you know, you want to see retired at Bel Air with a, you know, 100-square-foot mansion. That's not what the guy's looking for. He wants to play good ball. Somehow, some way, there'll be some sort of football after his career in whatever avenue he chooses to get involved. I mean, you know, 2 years, $10 million, find a way to defer the guaranteed money. I think these guys are all happy here. And this was the biggest thing.
Right.
You saw it yesterday when Devin Smith went down.
Absolutely.
He was a rookie. He was struggling, had his periods back and forth. 12 veterans on a knee around them. I mean, they know the game. we all kind of knew the outcome. We knew he was done for the year. We knew the injury was serious, and it turns out it was an ACL. But this is a group of guys, because the coach is good, because they trust the front office, where everything is togetherness right now. This is a great unit of 53 guys, and Fitz is not the guy who's going to – I don't see him as the type of guy who's going to squash it over $2, $3 million. Never.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100% when it comes to that with the money issue. I mean, he's got his offensive coordinator that he clearly gels with perfectly. He's got receivers that he's not going to get anywhere else. So not that he's going to take an extremely team-friendly contract, but everything here is beneficial for him to be successful. And like you said, he's not that guy that's going to want to retire to Bel Air with, you know, all these cars and all that stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us tonight, man. We really, really appreciate it. Tell all the good folks that are tuning in where they can come and bombard you with draft questions so they can pretend they know what they're talking about come next April.
You know, obviously I have a deep Twitter addiction, so at Jeff_LJ_Lloyd. You need me, you can guarantee almost find me there pretty much anytime up until about midnight, because that's when we crash because we got young kids. But it was a blast, guys. Congratulations on your first 20 shows, and, you know, continued success for both of you.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks a lot.
As always,
we appreciate it.
No problem. We'll get back to Sammy Sadness tomorrow, guys.
Yes, we will. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Yeah, no, and I mean, Jeff makes a lot of really, really great points just pertaining to, like, what the draft is going to be like, et cetera, et cetera. We're about to kick off our fourth quarter. Paulie, take it away.
All right, guys, the heat is about to be turned up on Jetstream Radio, maybe to a level that it's never been reached or seen. Drew from Jersey, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, boys? What's going on?
What's going on, man? How's everything? Did you just get out of the gym? What are you doing?
Driving home from the gym. Something about, I think, TOJ Black Guy tricked me into calling in this week, but... He was like, he knew I was juiced up from beating the, you know, that sad sack of shit franchise in the Giants. So I was all fired up, and he kind of snuck in a little DM. I thought he was kind of just talking about some other stuff. And next thing I know, he was like, all right, man, talk to you Monday. I was like, this son of a bitch. Pulled the wool
That's
over
exactly
my
what
eye.
I did, man.
I tell you,
exactly
man, Connor, my man Connor, he heard about this through the grapevine. I got a couple texts late at night. He got his feelings hurt. He was like, this is bullshit. You don't call me from my blog that we're supposed to be doing together. And, you know, you call in to, you know, the Black Guy and Paulie's one. So I was like, all right, man, I said I got tricked. I said, I'll be honest. I think I got tricked into it. But you know what? It's been a good couple of weeks. So you got me on a good night. It was chest day at the gym. So everything's good today.
That's
well,
great.
What I told him was that you like your podcast host the way you like your liquor, dark, man. So I told him he needs
That's
to
it.
Get a
I like,
next time.
I like my
next
criminals, time. Man. Dark. That's it.
Oh my God.
So
all right. So listen.
I just want to say it's been a great couple weeks. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to listen to any of your previous 19 shows or any of the shows that I've done with Connor. So it's no insult to you guys. I haven't listened to any of the podcasts. But it's been a really good couple of weeks. Like I said, beating the Giants, I don't care how shitty they are. You know, for me, I know Paulie, he cares more about WWE diva rivalries than he does about the Giants and Jets rivalry. But for me, growing up, the Giants Jets rivalry was a big deal. So beating the shit out of those guys was great. And people, I don't know if people believe it or not, but I believe it's a big deal to the team. It's a big deal to the owner. It's a big deal to the franchise.
Oh, I agree with that for sure.
And I think it's a big deal to the players, even the guys who haven't been around. I think they kind of sensed it early on, and you know, we could springboard into a pretty good run. It's been the Jets beating the Giants, kicking the shit out of the Hawaiian dude that Paulie loves is great. The Eagles are a bunch of whores and fat bastards in that fan base, but they really did me a solid this week by making Rex cry and. That idiot Thurman yelling at the refs. Like, everything has been so perfect. And, you know, the sadness came out today. I mean, it's been a real good – it's basically the best Christmas ever. I'm not happy with Zev getting the 11 seed. I think Paulie and Zev should maybe switch. Paulie's been shitty, but he's not been a number five shitty. Zev's Zev is terrible, dude. Zev should be.
I think Zev got a Jewish Christmas gift from the sadness.
Because that 11 seed is horseshit. He's gonna lose to Hans, and Hans isn't even active, and it's total horseshit. Zev should be a top five seed. Just based on the fact that he live tweeted that he was running out of fucking gas.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, dude, like, come on. And he fought with his television, and he fought with his Netflix account on, like, live Twitter account shit. But, all right, you're a guy show, man. What's up? What are we doing? What's up? Talk to me.
So, that was a wonderful intro. We got to get a little bit serious, even though we try not to be that serious. But, you know, your thoughts on the Jets season overall and where we are heading into the last three games of the season.
Listen, the team sucked last year, and you know, they hired a new coach. They got rid of Rex and his bullshit. And I had no expectations coming into the year. I thought the team could be, you know, 10-6 or 6-10. I wasn't 100% confident in Geno, but I'd be lying if I said I was 100% confident in Fitzpatrick, you know, as well. As much as I like Bowles coming in, you know, who knows? He's a first-year coach. A guy could suck, you know, for all I know. And early on, you know, even after the first couple wins, you saw some issues that we saw last year with some discipline stuff and some time management. But I think the team has really come together. I like the fact that they've made changes, not just for changes. They've made changes that the team is really, you know, responding to with DeMario losing snaps and taking guys out and cutting Copels and making changes on special teams. You know, we shit on, you know, Bobby April, and he does suck. He's really been terrible. But, you know, they made some changes this week. You know, they had Walls become a gunner, and, you know, you saw a big difference in the team coverage and, the punt coverage. I've been happy with the year. I looked at it this way early on. If the Jets go 10-6 or 11-5 and they don't make the playoffs, it's going to suck. But I saw a couple teams in the past do that, and it really started a nice run for them as well. You know, this is year one. I believe the Cardinals a couple years ago had a really good year. I think they went 10-6, 11-5. They missed the playoffs. But you know what? It kind of started a nice run for those guys with a new team and a new GM and a new franchise. So it'll suck, but, Jets fans don't get 11-5 very often, so... I'll take the wins and hope for the best at this point.
That's true. Now you know I gotta ask about the two black wide receivers we have. Now I gotta ask about them. Being the TOJ black guy, I gotta ask about them. What do you think about Brandon Marshall?
Brandon Marshall is amazing, man. He's just an amazing player. And I mean, you could tell that the guy's matured as a human being, let alone as a player. And you could see just in general, like, you know, as football fans, you follow Brandon Marshall through his Denver and in Miami and in Chicago. And the guy has had, like, documented issues throughout his whole career. But you could tell with, you know, the mental awareness that he's kind of brought to the table the last couple of years and how even the media and players have responded to him, you know, last year and even into this year. Take his physical and his football talent, you know, away, and the guy's still a great human being right now, and that's what this team needed, besides a superstar to offset Eric Decker's just complete sexiness and awesome shit on the field. the team has got two legit wide receivers, and listen, when you have players that can make plays and beat the other player, not because, you know, of a scheme and not because of some tricks, they can beat you because they're better. You know, Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker are better than the cornerbacks in the secondaries that they're playing. And, sometimes it might not matter who's throwing the ball if you're just better than the guys you're playing against. And line up, throw the ball up, and, you know, and win games. And that's kind of what's been happening the last couple of weeks.
There you go. It's a great point.
Absolutely. So, Drew, we got a primetime game coming up Saturday night. So we can hopefully handle business and scoreboard watch on Sunday. But give us your take, preview of the Jets-Cowboys on Saturday night on primetime on NFL Network.
I mean, the team, I know I've said this a couple of times before, the Redskins, the Titans, I mean, obviously the Eagles didn't work out, the Giants. There's teams that the Jets just really match up really well against. And the Jets no way should lose this game at all. But I don't think the Cowboys should be competitive in this game. I mean, they got a nice offensive line, which, you know, the Jets obviously can, you know, can do some things with their D-line. You're not going to run the ball on the Jets. And the quarterback on the Cowboys suck. And the wide receivers, you know, and Dez is a good player, but you could bracket coverage Dez and let Revis just smack the shit out of whoever the other idiot is, you know, on the other side of the field. And let Jason Witten catch four-yard passes and knock the shit out of him. I mean, this is the type of game where same old Jets, trap game bullshit comes into play because this is just the way we think. But reality is this should be no different than the Titans game. This should be a game where early on you kind of get your feet wet, you feel the team out, and then by the second, third quarter you're just kicking the shit out of this team because they're not very good. I mean, they're just not a good team, and there's no reason why they should beat a team that's – not that the Jets are great, but they shouldn't beat a team that's a lot better than them. I don't care where the game's played. It doesn't matter. So I feel the Jets should win this game pretty easily other than, you know, ridiculous turnovers and penalties, which, you know, have happened. Now, listen, the Eagle game is a prime example. You know, coming into that game, the Eagles were playing badly. But the Eagles had talent. The Cowboys have Dez Bryant and a bunch of idiots. You know, they're not a good team, and they shouldn't win. And if the Jets don't beat them, it's going to be pretty disappointing.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Dez and a bunch of idiots. I couldn't have described it any better myself. Now, Drew, confirm something for me. Doesn't it sound like Paulie's running suicides on the other line?
I listened in before. I don't know what the hell was going on the phone. I checked in because I didn't know who was coming on. I think maybe Lantern was on before me. I wasn't sure, so I tried to check in before I got in the car, and I heard like Paulie was breathing heavy. I didn't know if he was fucking Darth Vader, and then like I heard like some doors closing. It sounds like a creepy situation over there. But listen, Paulie's a five seed, so you know what? Does that surprise anybody?
I had to let the dogs out. And I forgot
the dog's out. Come on, dude. What are you talking about?
2 weeks in a row. 2 weeks in a row I did it. I'm sorry.
I mean, put some WD-40 on that door. I hear it creaking. It sounds like you're in a haunted fucking house, Paulie. Jesus.
Drew,
it's 2015, man. Get a doggy door or something. You don't got to be open, dude. Jesus Christ. This guy's crazy. He's got two dogs. You got to get up every 5 seconds so the dog's out? Oh, my God.
Sometimes.
Man,
hey,
this is nuts.
They're stubborn.
I got a puppy at the house now, man. He ate all my mail today, so I know how the dog. Yeah, he ate all the Christmas cards. It was great. It was the best. People send me these fucking Christmas cards. Like I give a shit about this stupid Christmas card. I'm not. Yeah, I'm like, what do they want me to hang them on my refrigerator? Like, come on, get out of here, fucking idiots. Send me something on Facebook so I can never look at it. What else
brother,
we got going on? What's this, the 20th show? What does that mean? Is that like a, that's a good run.
Yeah, it's a pretty good run, man. It's a pretty good run. We're doing like almost 3,000. This actually puts over 3,000 listeners, man, which is kind of crazy for us. So we're extremely humbled by that.
I'm telling you, man, it's Connor's pissed. I mean, I slept through half the times Connor called for. He's like, dude, you want to do a podcast tonight? And I was like, yeah. Then he'd call me like the next day. He'd be like, Dick, you didn't even like call. And I was like, I know. I was doing, like, triceps or something. He's like, dude, come on, man. Like, what are you doing? But to be fair, Connor did lose, like, two podcasts in a row. Like, he lost them. So, you know, what am I supposed to do? I can't do it all.
There you go.
Did you guys make fun of Sean tonight?
We did a little bit.
Did we?
But if we got a minute. We got a minute 30 left. If you want to take a shot at Sean, please do it.
No, I mean, listen, Sean, I spent all day. Sean's a good dude. I met Sean one time. And by the way, Zeb's also a good dude. I met them both. They're just terrible on Twitter. They're just not good on the website. They're both good dudes. Zeb was a really cool guy. Like, the problem with Zeb is Zeb talks to you like he tweets, like you're having a conversation with someone. The problem is that nobody's listening. So he's tweeting when nobody's listening to him. And I really think I'm the only one who actually reads it because I'm pretty sure he's muted by almost everybody. Sean cannot be muted because Sean is so funny by not trying to be funny that he's a good tweeter, but he's really terrible at the same time. It's so great. During draft season, Sean is going to be so disgustingly bad, he is going to love and hate like 5,000 prospects. It's going to be great.
Easily.
Right, and then what's going to happen is by next June, he's going to tell you all the guys he loved and forget that he hated them 2 weeks before that. He's so he's the
100% factual.
Yeah, he's the typical. I'm gonna take as much as I can, black guy, and hope that you forget that I didn't make any sense when I said half the shit I said. But he's comical, so he's a. It is
awesome,
but
Drew.
But I make fun of Sean because he can take it. Sean's a good dude. I took all his black women, so he's mad at me. But in DMs, he's nice to me. He's my friend.
Oh my God! Nice. Thanks, Drew. Again, it was a great show. We appreciate it.
Hey man, good luck. I hope you guys get to like 25 or 30, and I'll call back in and do something else.
Nice, we appreciate
right,
it,
bro.
Man. Thank you so much. All
right, man. All right, see you guys later, man. Good luck.
Thanks. And I think we went a little over, right?
I think we're over. Does it still record? I don't know. It cut us off. It says we're off air, so I don't even know if this is on there. But
yeah.
Whatever. Great show. If this is recording, I'm going to watch Wrestling in the Divas.
Because all Paulie cares about is WWE Diva, right? Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If this is still recording, this is episode 20. Thank you for the 3,000 listens. We appreciate it. And we'll see you guys next week for hopefully another Victory Monday edition. Peace.
You are fucking dead.
Drew, he's like, oh, I love Paulie, but I care about the Giants. I know.